Welcome to the What's Next Sports podcast, where each week we will be taking a look back at the main headlines from the previous 7 days. We'll be offering you insights, opinion, hot takes and headline acts from the world of sport. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at whatsnext.pod and Twitter at whatsnextsport. Listen, feedback, enjoy and as always, trust the process. Which other than Beckham in Madrid, I can't think of too many others with the special number. But we've got the second part of Jimmy and I's conversation with Chris Kirkland coming up later on, which is as good as part one. But before that, as always, how are you both? Another world-class weekend out in the middle for you, Jimmy?
Yeah, some weekend, back-to-back tons. Overshadowed by some family news coming through, which is just fantastic. But back-to-back 50s, hard to believe. Did you say 23?
Yeah.
Shola.
Yeah.
We're just going to rule out Newcastle's greatest ever striker.
Yeah. Jimmy, to be honest with you, I got a name in there. I was happy and I got on with my script for the day.
Okay. Cheers, Andy. Good week, though. Thank you. How was yours? All right?
No. My weekend was purely awful, to be honest with you. Zero, exactly, on the dot. I am currently on track to average single figures for the season. Piggy's 0.25 is in danger. And I'm almost getting to the tipping point where actually going for that is more worthwhile than trying to score some runs out in the middle. And if we get rained off at the weekend, then, well, it might just be retirement. But Tinnis, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. My weekend, we won. And that's about as much as we need to talk about for my game. Another world-class performance from the lads, bar probably me and a couple of others, but that's fine.
Oh, you went the distance, didn't you?
I went the journey compared to everyone else, but that's all right. We're gonna move on swiftly from Jimmy's averaging over 100 to me and Doig currently probably offering little to nothing between us, but that's all right.
There's no iron team, Sean. It's our own. As a podcast, Jim, What's Next are doing okay for the year. We've got 250s racked up.
Great. I'm glad we can pull it together as a trio.
And 5 wickets.
Good on you, Jim. You keep doing it for us.
Jimmy, how many more back-to-back 50s do you think you'd have to get before you got an international call-up?
Well, that'll never happen. Although, watching Don Bess again just makes the mind boggle. I can't be that far off.
If he keeps scoring 50s, selectors have got to take notice at all levels.
I'm more concerned about making the selectors at the club take notice, first of all. I think we'll work on the home routes and then we'll slowly build our way up to maybe looking international and getting Andrew Strauss and Ashley Giles and co taking notice. But I think for now, Andy, I don't want to make a tit of myself like August bank holiday again. That's the only thought on my mind.
Good old-fashioned selectors that you've named up there as well. Have you got a dick of the week for us then?
I thought you were going to go through your. Headlines before doing dick of the week, but dick of the week again goes to Rio Ferdinand, and for no other reason than I haven't done any research to get one. No one's really been in the news this week. The Premier League Hall of Fame's out. I saw his name was on the list, and it reminded me how much of a dick he is. So, for the second week running, Rio Ferdinand, dick of the week. Well done. Come and collect your award.
I'll do my headlines now, Jimmy. Staying in football, the fallout against the 1-2-A-6 continues with protests outside of grounds, breaking into training grounds, and Josh Kroenke admitting on fan radio phone-in that he doesn't really know football, which has led to Arsenal being linked with a takeover by the Spotify owner, meaning nearly all of our subscriptions will be going up to pay for Ozil's wages that they are still covering. Woodward has resigned at Man United. Hull have been promoted to the Championship. Watford promoted to the Premier League, securing an immediate return for 2 out of 3 relegated sides, with Bournemouth sitting pretty in the playoffs. In Spain, the Sevilla v Granada game had to play an extra minute after the full-time whistle had already been blown after a refereeing error, which forced the players to re-put on their boots on the side of the pitch, Sunday League style. Matthew Wade and Travis Head have missed out on their Cricket Australia contracts. Mark Wood was playing in the NAPL. Zimbabwe beat Pakistan in a T20 for the first time. And the 100 have made a U-turn on calling wickets out. In the IPL, Pat Cummins took Sam Curran for 30 off and over before a few days later, Ravi Jadeja took an over for 37. And also in the IPL, a number of players have decided to leave the tournament citing COVID concerns. Kamaru Usman knocked out Jorge Masvidal in the UFC on a great card, which featured one of the worst leg breaks you'll ever see for Chris Weidman. Gray McDowell made a no-look hole-in-one on the PGA Tour. Ryan Garcia has pulled out of his upcoming fight with Fortuna to take time for himself and look after his own mental health. Podcast favourite Dom Best took a sixth in the county championship as Hamid scored double back-to-back hundreds. And lastly, there were fans back in the cup to see City walk over Brian Mason's, according to Pep's Spurs team, in a game where XG needed to add an extra decimal place to register Spurs' goal threat. None of us got the score spot on. Jimmy and I were right backing City. Tinners, can you please explain why you possibly thought Spurs under Mason would win that game?
Because it would have just been funny. I don't think they had any chance to it, but to be serious, if Gareth Bale had scored a worldie and then Ryan Mason had put a couple of extra defenders on, it would have been quite funny, but it's never going to happen. I'll catch up with you at some point. It doesn't really matter. I'm that far behind you, Doig. Then what's the point? There's no point of playing anymore. You've ruined it.
All ifs and buts. What are you on about? You can't come out after you've made an absolute horror prediction and say you did it for a laugh and a joke.
I can do, because I just
have. No, you can't.
I just have.
No.
But you can do.
No, you can't.
Can we move
serious
on from
podcast
that?
Show,
no,
get with
I'll
it.
I'll move on to the more serious thing, Jim. I was going to mention this later on, but should the IPL still be playing? Should they still be doing it? Have some of the players done the right thing by leaving, or do you think that it should be played like the Premier League was played here when we had our lockdown and it was the entertainment for people that were in the houses stuck? Or is India far worse than what we were ever going through, and it should be stopped immediately and taken back somewhere like Dubai and played there?
Well, first on that, I think I called Pat Currins earlier on, which is disappointing, but all credit to him. I think the national situation in India is obviously terrifying, though. The population density is causing those numbers just to rise and rise. How exposed those players actually are to that situation, I've no idea about. They're obviously in their own bubbles. They're going to stadiums. They're back and forth, which is exactly what they'd be doing in Dubai. You could talk about well-being of the country, of having that on TV. We know how big a thing cricket is in India. We know how big Premier League returning to UK screens was in terms of having a means to watch something, to be out there. I think it's difficult if the death total keeps going up and up and up. And I think from a player safety point of view, they would be removing themselves, as a few of them already have, whether that's to go back to Australia and to join national bubbles or whatever it might be. But I think also some of those people who are money backers in the IPL could probably do themselves a lot of good press by supporting some of the causes in terms of getting the oxygen to where it needs to be on ICU units, rather than paying Johnny Bairstow even more money than he already needs, despite being a more than worthy white ball candidate.
Yeah, I was listening to something today on TalkSport, I think it was, and they basically said, imagine how many COVID tests are getting done on the players every day, all the commentary staff, all the medical staff that are at every game, because it's an elite game. There's got to be an ambulance crew there, which will be however many extra people who are there, which could be somewhere else doing probably a more important job, because at the end of the day, most cricket games go through fairly... Well, you very rarely see too many horrific injuries in cricket away in the hospital, but there's I imagine a couple of ambulances and a few paramedics standing by, that which could be used in a much better place at the minute. Don't want to talk about it too much, because I'm sure we'll cover the IPL again in a couple of weeks when it doesn't get cancelled, because it's far too much money. But I just thought that's one of the headlines that was worthy of a quick chat.
Any of the other headlines to touch on? Did either of you see the leg break in the UFC? That's the worst leg injury I've seen since Jimmy's thigh went in 2015 and he had to sit on the boundary with the Bulmers for a few weeks.
You laugh, right? But that was career threatening. And if it hadn't been for a physio, you know the worst bit about that was? My mum was in for a heart operation about a week after, and she was pushing me in a wheelchair around the RVI. Going for address. I'll never forget that. Now, there was a couple that you made, but to be honest, Andy, I've completely forgotten what you said.
The leg break was bad. I've seen...
Feel them all come out of me.
I saw his x-rays that he put on of the break, and then it being fixed again, and it didn't look very pretty. I'm not a massive fan of seeing... I kind of saw his leg half bent and quickly turned it off, because I wasn't overly interested to see it, but the x-ray I can get on board with, and it was an interesting one. I'm sure he'll be done for some time now.
I haven't seen it yet, actually. But by the sounds of it, I won't be going searching for it anytime
soon. No, I think if it pops up on your screen, have a quick look, but I wouldn't go Googling it anytime soon.
I heard something, it was on the Fight Disciples podcast, and the way Nick Pete described it as, he said it's like when someone gives you a Starburst and they say, don't chew, don't chew. If someone shows you that video of the leg break, it's saying, watch it all the way, watch it all the way, watch it all the way, and you will Starburst and you'll always look away because it's that grim when his leg literally is wrapping round and then when he tries to stand, oh, it's grim.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We'll move on. We'll not talk about that. Tinners, let's come to you first this week. What's next?
Jimmy mentioned earlier on, I thought we'd just talk about the Hall of Fame. Obviously, Shearer and Henry are the first two candidates, well, the first two into the Hall of Fame, sorry. First of all, were they the two right? I personally think Shearer was bang on. Yep, absolutely no doubt about it. I've heard a couple of arguments for Henry. And then just a couple of candidates each, please. And I'll give you mine once you give me yours.
How are we doing this? Are we doing serious candidates or are we doing our, a bit like we did with Sports Personality, we're putting our own sort of alternative spin?
All right, then. Two serious ones, one funny one, or with your own spin on it.
Perfect. There you go. Sounds good to me.
Just quickly on whether they're the right. Yes or no, Jimmy?
Yes, 100%. Alan Shearer is, and until someone comes and breaks his goal scoring record, the greatest Premier League striker of all time. Thierry Henry, growing up watching him, was just a joy to watch. Now, whether or not you turn around and you say someone like Aguero should have taken it, but I think the fact that they've also, if you look at who they've nominated for the next stage of the Hall of Fame, they've not gone with anyone like a Kompany, a Yaya Touré, a Cristiano Ronaldo, a Rooney, the more modern players, I think they're later to come, and I think they'll earn their, earn their place further down the line. But I think for now, Henry and Shearer are one and two.
You've got to be retired from football for 5 years before you're allowed in. Something I saw earlier on today. So
Shola went a couple of years ago, didn't he?
So like Rooney. Right. Yeah, I think they're the right two as well. I think Henry brought something different to the Premier League when he needed to. I don't think it was all about his stats and about how many titles he won. A lot of people have gone on about how many titles the Man United team won. But I think what Henry did, as well as what Shearer did, they were both spot on.
I think he's the greatest foreign import, isn't he? And as Jimmy says, he's the greatest striker in the Premier League. So it does make me laugh after all the Aguero talk last week and how many tweets were put out there saying, where does Aguero rank out of X, Y and Z? That Shearer, whose name was barely mentioned in some of those conversations, is actually the first name put into the Hall of Fame alongside Thierry Henry. The only thing about the Shearer induction thing that I would have quite liked, and obviously as a Newcastle fan, that's the only place I really associate him with. But on his shirt that he was presented with, the two framed pictures down the bottom, he's won the Premier League. And I know it was at Blackburn, but it's another justification for his case. Like, he has won something. He's not a serial nearly man. He has won it. So could that have been marked in some way? And just one of the pictures was him with the trophy and a Blackburn shirt. I don't know. He's there. He's there on merit. Absolutely. Steve Howson is alongside Rio Ferdinand making his comments saying that if he was to do a top 10, neither of those two would be in there. But it's a joke.
And that's literally a pod of pricks. So no one's really concerned what their opinion of the matter is. Shearer turned them down and that's why he's bitter. I think Rio Ferdinand probably, I don't think he actually believes that Shearer shouldn't be including it. I think he probably knows Shearer should be. But for the sake of sticking up to a Man United podcast and being the cock he is, then yeah, of course he's going to let his mouth run a little bit on that. But who cares? Who listens to them anyway?
Well, why don't we look? Because it's 6 of 23 that has gone to a vote, isn't it? So why don't we talk about, or out of those 23, who our 6 might be first? And then we can go to our... I haven't yet, but I'll vote on the back of the way you sway me, Jimmy. So you got Adams, Beckham, Bergkamp, Sol Campbell, Cantona, Andy Cole, Ashley Cole, Drogba, Les Ferdinand, Rio Ferdinand, Robbie Fowler, Gerrard, Roy Keane, Lampard, Letizia, Owen, Peter Schmeichel, Scholes, Terry, Van Persie, Vidic, Vieira, Wright. Ian Wright. Where do you vote out of those lot? And do you have to make an 11 out of it? Could it be all strikers? Could it be all whatever?
I can tell you I voted this morning on it. I can tell you, was it 5 or 6 that you got to vote on?
I think it was 6.
I can tell you certainly my five that I voted on, because I remember them. I went for Les Ferdinand because played for Newcastle and I wanted to support a fellow Geordie. I went for, well, not a fellow Geordie, but you know what I mean. I
greatest went for World Book Day outfit of all time.
I feel like if we come onto this, we're sort of crossing a line that we then can't return from. Who else did I go for? I went for Paul Scholes because scores goals. Yeah, and that photograph of his cock coming out of the shorts. Do you ever see those things where it's like, if you could hang up a photograph in the Louvre, what would it be? That Paul Scholes making a tackle with his tackle. I went for Gerrard just because phenomenal player. Feel like he could do everything. I went for Ian Wright because he just, I don't know what it is when you think of the Premier League for me, and I don't know why, maybe it's just sitting down and being a little sad bastard watching too much Premier League years. I always think of Ian Wright. So I went Ferdinand, Wright, Scholes, Gerrard, and who was the other? Drogba.
Didier.
Just iconic. That goal at Everton, followed by that knee slide, and those knee slides are still imprinted on the pitch at Goodison Park. Just phenomenal.
Tillers, where would you go out of that lot?
To be fair, my five are fairly similar to Jimmy's. I've more or less gone the same, I think, Jim. I've gone Ashley Cole as well, though, because I think he's just was the best fullback, and I kind of wanted to put a defender in because I've just gone on with midfield, and I don't like Real Ferdinand. Like, I don't think any of us do, so he went in. Yeah, I mean, I've gone Gerrard for main reasons of Liverpool fan, great Drogba, because I think Drogba was very similar to Henry. He kind of took over from Henry, I think, is what the biggest kind of, again, overseas player to come in. And then I've watched a lot of Les Ferdinand with Shearer. When you watch any kind of goals with when Shearer's scoring them on the telly, Les Ferdinand's always there. And then Scholes as well, because like Jimmy said, it was between Scholes and Lampard for me, because they both could do everything. But Scholes just pipped it for me. To pick that down to two, I don't know how many I'd to pick for what we're saying. To put that down to two, it would be Gerrard and Drogba.
I do think Roy Keane will make it, just as being the captain of that United era. I think he will be one of the next in. And I do think that if Ryan Giggs didn't have his off-field antics going on at the moment, he'd have been on that list of 23. I think the publicity around him is too hot at the moment, but I think he'd also be one of them that certainly in the coming years may well make it. I agree with you on Ashley Cole. I'd like him to be recognised in some way. But yeah, I don't see Robbie Fowler.
No.
Do you think Michael Owen will ever get nominated?
He's been nominated.
He's been nominated. I think it'll be a while before anything happens with it.
Nah.
Liverpool United Newcastle legend, Jimmy. He's a Premier League through and through it, apart from
a bell Madrid piece.
Well, a lot of the names on that list are, to be fair.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Vidic?
Hard man. I would never say it to his face.
Well, I'm not asking you to say it to his face. Do you think he deserves his place on this? Beckham?
I think there are centre-backs. I think Sol Campbell would get my vote over Vidic, the centre-back.
Former Newcastle player, of course. Good shout, Andy. Mm-hmm.
And our tip for the England 21's job, Jimmy, so we can't really knock back him, can we? Cantona, was he big enough in the Prem?
I think
I know it's quality, but
there was a show on last night about Henri and Shearer sitting down with Sky Sports and talking about their induction. And Henri talked a bit about Cantona, and he talked about the sort of the swagger that he came across with and that arrogance that he could almost pull off just because it was Eric Cantona. I mean, I don't know about you, but I always think back to that interview he gave where he talked about the seagulls following the trawler waiting for the fish to be thrown overboard and then just stood up and walked out of his interview.
I just remember him confirming a fan. Yeah. The thing about it going to a fan vote is that fan bases, and you will get, I think, potentially six United players in there because all the United fans will just go massive on it. Arsenal fans seem to win every single Twitter poll that goes on, whether it's who's the biggest team in Europe, who's this, that, or the other. It seems to be Arsenal fans just hammer it, hammer it, hammer it. So that's the only thing. If it's alongside a vote and then there's going to be a panel of people to make a decision, it's worthwhile. But at the moment, if it's just purely on votes, I think some good players would potentially get missed out on. And then I guess the other thing is, if you're going to have a Premier League Hall of Fame, does it have to be your best Premier League striker of all time? So that's why Shearer's in. Your best foreign import. And that's why Henry's then. I appreciate that's potentially subjective, but does it have to be your best centre-back, your best goalkeeper, your best full-back, and have to fall into that category? And does it have to be a manager go in there?
I think a manager one day will. I think, of course it will. But then that comes, I think that brings us nicely into what we want to talk about next. Who would your outside scoop be for Premier League Hall of Fame? Sean?
Well, I was just thinking about it. And
I think this could either go two ways. I think you could either have a comedy player of the past, so for example, someone like Sisco at Newcastle, even Joe Linton at the minute, or you could go and you could talk about someone that at your club watching Liverpool.
Oh, I know. Gravesen. Get Gravesen in.
I need Tommy Gravesen.
Get him in.
Morning, Gordon.
Morning, Gordon.
No, he's never been a player. Screw him. He's not going in. Yeah, I know what you mean.
I tell you who I did think of in terms of being relatively iconic through the Premier League years, who won't necessarily get the recognition as being a great or as a best or whatever it might be, but for me, for whatever reason, will always be synonymous with the Premier League. And that was Mårten Gamst Pedersen. And probably because he just had a habit of scoring against Newcastle, but he will always be Premier League Blackburn days alongside your Tud guy or something like that. And if you've got to have each club represented.
Yeah, he is a firm player in the midst of that streets will never forget role.
Yeah. And I think that there is value for that.
I think you could throw him in there. I think you could also throw someone like, if you look at one season, not say Mårten Gamst Pedersen was a one season wonder, he never did it for an entire season. He only did it two games against Newcastle. If you were to throw a one season wonder in there, meet you at Swansea.
I mean, exactly. Yeah, Wigan.
Rocked up 18 Premier League goals in a season, linked with moves back to Spain to go to the big clubs, never seen again.
Some player.
Is there going to be grounds for someone like an Anelka who's played around? Will someone like Heskey. Darren Bent, because he's played in loads of... Well, Heskey's in the 100 club, Peter Crouch's in the 100 club. Like, they've scored goals, I get them, but what about like Gareth Barry on his appearances?
Gareth Barry, I think, will one day get in there. I think someone like Nicholas Anelka, who was just... He had that situation, didn't he? I don't know what the entire thing was when he was at West Brom, the racial thing, and I think that'll probably put definitely sort of brackets getting in there. But Nicholas Anelka, well, I mean, whenever you go into a pub quiz, he seems to be an answer on most sporting questions, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's two others that I would suggest, and one of them is purely for if we're going down the best ever route, and it's two categories either. It's best ever celebration or best ever shithousery. And that is Adebayor.
Yeah.
So that celebration when he has run 100 yards to knee slide in front of absolute pelters in front of the Arsenal fans. He's worth a shout for me. And then the other one, purely for being immortalised in film, because it was his free kick against Liverpool that Santiago Munez stood up and hit, Laurent Robert. Because that goal will go down in history purely in cinematic form.
I feel like I'm a big fan of looking at it that way. Cinematic form. Santiago Munez, full stop, put him in.
Get him Fulham.
In. Just literally for that game against Fulham.
Right. If we had to sit down and we had to pick the six, obviously we've got a vote for the six. Obviously, that's what you vote for. Between the three of us, two each, your top two, that'll be your six. And then I'm happy to put Adebayor in there for his shithousery as well, as our seventh and most random one. My two will be... Well, we'll go around, go one each, so it means that we can't, like, someone doesn't pick the same one. So my first one, I'll stick with Gerrard as my first one. Jimmy?
I'm going to stick with Paul Scholes and his tackle.
Fair enough. There you go.
Roy Keane would be my first one, just to clean out that midfield.
Uh, Didier Drogba is going to be my second one.
Ian Wright. Gold tooth.
Doiga, who's your last one?
I'm going to go Ashley Cole, if nice. Nothing else, for his links to the North East with Warshawl.
And then Adebayor's our shithousery.
I don't know. I mean, you've got... I need to get his name up again because I always seem to get it wrong. George Weah's cousin, Ali Dia.
Ali Dia.
Literally, for the sole purpose of he managed to convince an entire football club that he was George Weah's cousin.
How would you go about doing that? So, again, not even taking the piss. Say, Jimmy, we clipped up your innings from the other day from the stream and we showed off all your great shots, front foot, back foot play. We couldn't send that to a club and someone go, we'll give him a contract. You'd have to go and net, you'd have to go and try. He must have been at training sessions where someone has gone. He's not actually that.
Maybe the times are different. Maybe it's like when you tune in at Gillette on Saturday and someone again has scored against Sunderland in the third tier of English football called a trialist. Maybe it's like that. Maybe just Graham Souness turned around and went, well, the only way to judge him is throwing in the deep end. But maybe England selectors will say the only way to judge Jimmy is by throwing him into the deep end.
Oh, and a fast one at the Wacker.
Well, fuck that. But you know what I mean? Maybe a slow, low one at Cardiff?
I can't believe a Premier League club has legitimately gone, right, he's George Weah's cousin, so let's get him in, and not actually thought, let's throw him a ball and see whether he can do a few keepy ups. I know Brathwaite, when he signed at Barca, couldn't really do his keepy ups, but that's because he was going from Borough or whatever it might be. Like, someone has seen him kick a ball before they've said, son, you're going on.
1996, times were different back then.
Funny, we missed our stage. We missed our era.
Well, how about our next guest, Andy? How about part two? Where does Chris Kirkland rank with his cap?
He's got to be in there. Most iconic get-up.
You've got to say so. Either that or Edgar Davids' season at Tottenham and his glasses.
Mm, that's true. Or the keeper in the grey sweat.
Oh, yeah, he was iconic, wasn't he? Ooh. Wasn't he playing in like the 2018 World Cup? Is he still not kicking around?
Was that not another one? Was that just a different bloke?
Nah. Same bloke. Adam, it's the same bloke.
I don't think he can get in the Premier League Hall of Fame.
If it's not the same bloke, it's a touching tribute.
Yeah.
But if we're going to get up, he's got to be close.
Yeah. I'm sure they'll have a Hall of Fame for everything. With that in mind, Doig, what's next?
Yeah, well, Jimmy's just mentioned him, brought him up. We have our second part of our sit-down with Chris Kirkland. We left the conversation by talking about some of his old managers and his thoughts on Steve Bruce, which are maybe or may not be slightly more in his favour than they were when we sat down with him a little while ago. In this second part, he talks a little bit further out the back end of his career. He talks a little bit about his own mental health issues that he suffered from during his playing days. He talks a little bit about goalkeepers that he has played with and the role of being a journeyman goalkeeper, but also about a lot of the charity work and foundation work he is doing with various different charities across the country to raise funds for some very good causes. So without further ado, part two with Chris Kirkland. Enjoy.
Did you ever, you mentioned earlier about managers losing the dressing room like that. Is there an example of a manager that you worked with that lost the dressing room? Maybe not that quickly, but certainly with one action or?
Not really, no, to be honest, no. No, not really. Some managers say things sometimes that you think, but people have got to realize there's so much pressure on them. It is 24/7. You see managers nowadays. You know, David Moyes, when he was out of football for about a year, he looked 30 years younger. When he went in at West Ham within 2 weeks, he looked 30 years older again. There's so much pressure on managers these, and people pay, you know, well, he gets paid to do it. Well, yeah, they do get paid, but it's the easiest thing to throw at people. He's getting paid that much money, so he should be able to deal with it. It's rubbish. It's rubbish. It's like fans that think they can say what they want and abuse people. Well, we pay our money to go to games. I can say, yeah, you can say what you want, and you can say in the right way, well, he's not for me. He's not good enough for the team. You know, I'd prefer somebody else to play. Not a problem, but don't turn it into hate. And you know, we've seen it all now with it. Just because you go to games, you think you pay and you can say what you want. It's not. It's, you know, it's going the wrong way, and it needs to be stopped quick. But everyone's entitled to their own opinion. You know, if we've seen it now at Liverpool, you know, there's calls for Jürgen's head after the last game, which, I mean, I can't believe that happened. But that's the way football is. You know, a manager can be the greatest thing in the world, win 5 games, lose a game, and all of a sudden, oh, he's no good anymore. Same as players. Players are the same. We've seen it with Messi. When Messi don't score for 2 or 3 games, oh, he's lost it. He's lost the plot. So it's so fickle, football, unfortunately.
Has management ever tempted you, or does that fickleness put you off?
No, that's no chance. No, I love football, and you know, as a coach, possibly, yeah, but that manager role, I did actually consider it. I did think about it, but it consumes you. It takes over your life completely. And what for? You know, all the hate you get, and you know, adds years onto you, and obviously the health, you know, it affects your health massively. Seen that with Gerard Hillier at Liverpool when he had the heart attack. I was on the bench that game against Leeds. You know, it does so much. You know, but for a load of these managers, it's a drug for them. You know, they need football. A load of them need to do it no matter what the pressure is.
Southampton have recently shipped 9 twice in relatively short periods of time. Not long after Bruce left Wigan, you were in goal when Spurs put 9 past you. You're possibly the best person to ask this question to, therefore. And how will Southampton have been feeling immediately after those games? How can they move forwards? How can the keeper get his head round actually being able to go in and go into the next couple of games?
You have to. Simple as that. You have to block it out. I mean, that week after that was worst week in football for me. We were, you know, we trained a lot. It was on the Sunday, I think the game was. We trained morning and noon, morning and night, sorry, the whole week. And then we beat Sunderland at the weekend 1-0, which you probably lads are happy about. But yeah, we beat them 1-0 at the weekend. And then you quickly move. I mean, you never forget it. Don't get me wrong, still to this day, you never forget it. But I think it's happened to them, Southampton, twice now. But listen, it's going to happen again. And there'll be bigger scores than that, because that's just the way football's going. You know, there'll be 10s, there'll be 11s, there'll be 12s before long. But you just have to bounce back quickly and hope it doesn't happen to you. And if it does happen, hope it doesn't happen again.
Was it a similar freak half hour for you guys when you were in goal for that Spurs game?
It was 1-0 at half time. And then I think it went 2-1. And then, yeah, the rest was just a blur. It was just the clock just wasn't moving at all.
And who was your back four?
Emerson Boyce was there. We had Eric Edmund, I think, was there.
Was Titus there at that point?
Did Titus play in that game? I can't remember, to be honest. I think he might have done, yeah. I think he might have done. I don't know who he was. Gary Caldwell, was it? Is Gary Caldwell playing?
Edmund, Sharna, Boyce, Bramble.
Right, okay. Yes, I mean, the last...
Zogbia was there, if you want to blame him.
And Zogbia?
He was playing.
Oh, wow. I must admit, I've not got too many nice things to say about him.
Well, we can move on to that. We can talk about him shipping 9.
No, we'll leave that one. Well, I'll tell you what. In fact, yeah, I will say it because it's public knowledge. But, yeah, I mean, the biggest thing that annoyed me about that game was the ref added about 4 minutes on. It was already 7-1, and he has 4 minutes in on it, and then they scored 2 more. And then why are you adding four more minutes? Just blow the whistle. And then after that game, obviously, we went back to Wigan. We had a meeting the next day. Gary Caldwell was the captain, and said, look, we'll refund all the tickets for the Wigan fans that went down there, refund the travel, everything like that, which all the lads obviously had no issue with apart from one man. Well, I wouldn't even call him a man, apart from one lad. Yeah, who didn't pay, obviously, Charles. So that didn't go down too well within the dressing room, and that was him pretty much done then with all of us.
Yeah, I think there's one or two stories about him not quite getting on with his teammates.
I can imagine they're all true.
At the back end of your career at Preston, Jordan Pickford was there as a youngster on loan from Sunderland. Sam Johnston, who's now West Brom's number one, joined the club, as did Anders Lindegaard, who's at ex-Man United. Was that the best group of goalkeepers that you trained with day in, day out?
Jordan Pickford's probably the best I've ever worked with. I think he's gone backwards now. I see things in his game now, and more so getting involved with the crowd and getting too worked up. He never did that when he was at Preston, and he was outstanding for Preston. And he'll still come back because he just needs to calm down a little bit. But yeah, he's probably the best I've worked with. Didn't really work with Anders too much. Sam Johnston, great lad again. You know, worked hard and top keeper. But yeah, Jordan's probably the best I've worked with during my career.
When you were on loan at Sheffield Wednesday, there's a decent list of players that you played with well, not when you were on loan, sorry, when you were playing at Sheffield Wednesday, it's a decent list of players. Mikel Antonio, Ross Barkley, Benik Afobe, Emilio Martinez. Could you see the quality in those players at young ages?
Yeah. Yeah, there's always something that stands out. I mean, Mikel, he just had power, raw pace and power. And if you've got that, you know, you've always got a chance. And he developed, obviously, his game, and he's gone on now. And, you know, he's outstanding for West Ham. But, yeah, you did Ross, just so comfortable on the ball. You know, in when you used to do boxes and there was like 10 players in a box and not much room, he just seemed to have nobody around him at all. It just seemed too easy for him. So, you know, obviously, Emmy was been out on loan a few times when he was at Arsenal, come to us, good lad, great lad. Did I expect him to do what he's done now? Probably not, if I'm being honest, because he went back to, but it just shows how much you can grow quickly by going out and getting experience. Benik come to us, great lad as well, and he knew Niall from One Direction, didn't he? So all the lads were buzzing with that because they got 1D tickets and all that. So yeah, he's a good lad as well.
I mean, the list of some of the players that you played with, Michael Keane in there
amazing
as well.
Amazing club, really is. I mean, the tradition, the history, Hillsborough, old school ground as well. The fans, the power of the fans, they're missing the fans this year. You know, if the fans were there now, they wouldn't be where they were. But yeah, just an amazing club to play for with brilliant fans.
Chris, just going back, Jordan Pickford's, of course, England's number one now. You were fortunate enough to be capped by England after stints in the 18s, 21s, as well as the England B team when that was a thing. Do you think that's something that could be brought back? Because England have got this plethora of players at the moment, both ends of the pitch. We're talking, in from a Newcastle fans' point of view, could Darlow potentially be the third choice keeper to go, or is it going to be a Pope, a Henderson who isn't playing at Man U? And then obviously in the front third of the field, there's about 15 different attacking options that they could take. Do you think a B team would be beneficial for football or not?
No, I think there's too much football as it is at the minute. I mean, internationals, your bread and butter is your club football, obviously, but then playing for you internationally is you know, the pinnacle for a lot of players. But yeah, we've seen a lot of injuries. Then they go back to the clubs, are injured, and you know, there's a lot of fatigue. And again, it comes back to like a lot of fans say, well, they shouldn't be tired. You know, they get paid that much, they shouldn't be tired, which is it's nonsense. You know, you take into account all the travelling away from home, all your training. It's just, you know, it's living in hotels. People say, oh, great, I'd love to live in a hotel, but when you do it for 2 weeks and that's all you can do, go down to eat, back to your room, go down to train, back to your room, go down to eat, back to your room. Trust me, 2 weeks feels like 2 years sometimes when you're in the hotel, so it is tough. But no, I think there's too much football at the minute, so I certainly wouldn't be. I think when you get to the England team, you've got to earn the right to get there. You don't want it's sort of like it's not demoting playing for England or anything like that. But the pinnacle is playing for the first team, and if you deserve to do that, you'll get there eventually.
When you got your England call-ups, did you notice the divide amongst the England squad that a lot of people talk about, that Man United, Chelsea, Liverpool divide? Was it?
Yeah, it wasn't a nasty divide. It was just, you know, you sat with your Liverpool players and Man U, Chelsea table. You know, and yeah, it probably did have an effect on why they didn't do as well as they should have done as a nation then with the team, with the players they had back then. I mean, I don't think you'll have a better squad of players when you're talking about them lads, you know, Terry's, Ferdinand's, Gerrard's, Lampard's, Scholes, Rooney. I don't think you'll have a better squad of players than that for England. I hope we do, but we've certainly not had, you know, we've got a great squad now, but that was probably one of the best eras. It was called the Golden Generation. You know, why didn't they? And yeah, it probably did have that. I think a few players have come out and said that, you know, it was probably that divide, that rivalry, massive rivalry, that probably hindered the England situation. I think Gareth's done a great job now. He's got rid of all that. There's no rivalry now. When you go with England, you are an England player. You forget about your clubs. And you are there for the England national team. I think Gareth's done a great job of bringing the England players and the fans back closer together, because I think for a few years there was a bit of a divide between the fans and the players.
Did anyone go in and try and buck the trend? Was there anyone that tried to break down the sort of walls amongst the teams? Or
I mean, I'm going back to, I mean, when I first got involved when I was 18, it was like David Seaman, Nigel Martin, you know, Tony Adams, Shearers. Yeah, they used to all sit together, you know, around the table. I mean, I was just starstruck. I just used to look at the tables thinking, oh my God, there's so-and-so, there's so-and-so. But it was great for me. David Seaman, Nigel Martin, they were brilliant. But yeah, there was definitely when it was, you know, the Man U's, the Chelsea's and the Liverpool's, there was definitely a, you sit there, sort of. Not, but you weren't told to do it. You just sort of went there. That was just a normal thing to do, the natural thing to do.
I heard stories from, I think it was Michael Gray telling a story of his England call-up, and he said that it was around a time like that when it was Tony Adams, Shearer, so-and-so, and he said that there was almost like, in the hotels in the evening, there was a big sort of gambling group that would all get together and play cards and poker. Was that going on when you were?
We had pool tables, there's pool table tennis, there's always something going on, there's always a game of pool, game of table tennis, yeah, card school. That was just the old school way of football. When I grew up in Coventry, first team lads used to go out most Tuesdays and most Saturdays after the games. That was just the way it was back in them years. You can't do that now. I mean, there still is card schools, obviously, but the drinking's obviously stopped a lot more than it was. But yeah, it was certainly different times and different generations back then.
What was the nightlife in Coventry like?
We actually used to go to Leamington. We only went to Coventry a few times. We went more to Leamington. But that's when we was in the youth team. But in the youth team, you could get away with it. But yeah, there was no, when I moved to Liverpool, there was no getting away with it. You can't, being a big lad as well. It was, but again, that's when I said it could have been, I could have gone after that lifestyle, that nightlife, if I didn't have my girlfriend sort of thing with me. So, I'm thankfully didn't, because there is bright, like Newcastle, Liverpool's a, there's a few places in Liverpool you can go for a great night out.
Was there any players that did get caught up in that nightlife when you were at Liverpool?
Yeah, you always get players going. I mean, El Hadj Diouf used to go to nightclubs night before a game. He used to say it used to relax him. The music used to relax him. So he used to just take a fine. He weren't bothered. He just took a fine. He just used to take the fine for it. But yeah, there was time. I mean, it stopped a lot. I mean, he still used to, obviously. But back then as well, camera phones and all this sort of stuff, it wasn't really, there's nobody filming you. You can't do anything these days. You go out, go taking a pee in a bush and you'll get filmed or snapped. So it was different. It was different times back then. But now you can't do anything now.
In 2016, you signed a one-year deal at Bury and you left before the start of the season. It later revealed that this was due to an ongoing personal battle with depression that you've been suffering with for a number of years. Can you tell us a little bit more about that period of time in your life? Did anyone at any of your clubs prior to that know? And how were you able to keep that to yourself for 3-4 years at the back end of your career?
I didn't really know what it was, to be honest. I didn't know. I mean, it's when I left Wigan to go to Sheffield Wednesday, I commuted because my daughter was in school. We lived there. We didn't remove. You don't know how long you're going to be. I was 32, 33. You're not going to sign 5 years with anyone. It was only a year deal to start with. So I commuted. It was just long hours in the car on my own, long journeys. Winter was tough months. I was missing a lot of stuff back home. If I had to stay over, missing school plays, missing, simple things like taking the dog out when I used to. The routine that I got used to for 11 years when I was at Liverpool and Wigan just went, and my routine just completely changed. It flipped 180 and just, I don't know. You don't realise what you're going through. You think, I'll just snap out of it. I'll be better next week. And it just goes on and goes on and you just slip further and further back. And I left Sheffield Wednesday in 2005. I was going to sign again. I was in my training kit, got a new deal. Went upstairs to sign it and just paused when I had the pen in my hand. I said, look, I just need to get back home. That's the first one they knew there was an issue. But still back then, I didn't come out and say it was me until another year after, because not through embarrassment, just didn't know the way it was going to be taken. It comes back to that, well, why should a player be depressed when he's earning that much money? So you do, things do go through your head like that. And plus, the biggest thing, I just didn't know what I was feeling, I didn't know what depression was. Didn't know what mental health was. I just thought, well, if I get back home, so I signed for Preston and thought getting back home would be better and it would reverse the cycle, but it obviously didn't, and ended up leaving Preston, went to Bury, and should never have signed for them. I just didn't want to play football anymore. Just didn't want to train. Didn't want to do anything. Just didn't want to leave the house. Didn't want to get in my car. Didn't want to turn my phone off. Didn't answer any calls, but the professional side kicks in thinking, right, come on, you've done this 19 years. This might be the thing that turns things around. You might start to feel better. So you've got to do it, got to give it a go. So I did, but quickly realised that it was the worst thing I could have done and had to ask for help. Then I rang Neil Mello and just said, look, who was in Liverpool with me, who's close friends. And I said, he'd had no idea. And I just said, look, what do I do? And he went, look, the PFA, I've got a mental health department. Give the PFA a call. And I never knew they did. So I rang them and said, look, I'm struggling with depression, mental health, I'm not sure what it is, I need some help. And they come and met us straight away, and that's when things started to get better. Only when you talk about things that you it's a big massive weight off the shoulder. It is the old saying, it's a big weight off your shoulders, and then you talk through things and realize why you're feeling that way, obviously for me, it was the big you know, change of routine, traveling on my own, staying away from home, which I've never liked doing, to be honest. Even when you travel away from it, I couldn't wait to get home. But it was and obviously then I had to retire though, because I needed to take care of the mental health. So it probably robbed me of 2 or 3 years, probably latter end of my career, being a number two probably.
Has that mental health department of the PFA sort of come out a little bit more in recent years? Sort of, obviously.
Yeah, there's still a long way to go. There's still a long way to go. The clubs have got, it's not just the clubs have got the biggest responsibility for me, because they see the players every single day. You know, they employ the players. Yes, you're a PFA member, but the clubs have got a huge responsibility. And things are starting to click into place now. A lot of clubs, will be looking after. It's not just when you're at a club, it's when you leave. It's like these lads now, when they're in academies from 6 years old, they get to 18 thinking, I'm going to be a professional footballer. And they get let go and they don't know anything else. They don't know anything else to do. And they get in trouble. So a lot of clubs now have got a duty, careful when players leave, to keep, to look after them. Can we help you out in any other way? The PFA got a huge response. There is a lot of stuff the PFA do. You can go on a lot of courses, learn different trades. You know, getting into coaching is tough. It's more about who you know these days. You can have all the qualifications in the world, but if your mate's not the manager or you don't know someone at the club, then you're probably not going to get that job, rightly or wrongly. So, but yeah, there's a lot more that can be done. But just in general now, I think it's only in the last 18 months people have really opened up now about mental health. And it's a normal thing. It is a normal thing. There's nothing to be embarrassed about. You turn the TV on, you turn the radios on. Every day there's something about mental health. You know, you lads doing this podcast, I've done podcasts, a lot, and it's about mental health. So it'll only continue to help people. I won't say get better, because I think once you've suffered with it, I think you're always likely to suffer with it. But it's about then coping with it and knowing what to do. So now I know that if I start to feel bad, I need to go for a walk, or I need to call someone, or, exercise is huge for mental health, and it makes you feel so much better. Talking to someone makes you feel so relaxing. Music, if I get anxious, I listen to, sounds of the sea, waves crashing, and just close my eyes, and it relaxes me straight away. So there's coping mechanisms for it, but obviously everyone's got their own different coping mechanisms.
Chris, that point that you've just made there about this podcast and having those conversations, and to some extent in the middle of the lockdown when we decided we wanted to start this up, it was exactly that. We weren't able to see each other, we weren't able to have that beer, we weren't able to go and play the five-a-side at those times, and it was those conversations and staying in touch with friends. And you do an incredible amount of work as an ambassador for charities supporting mental health and much more. As a podcast, we've made a donation to support this work that you do, which we think is incredible, and would love to continue to support that. And we'll always plug that. The conversation can never stop, and there is no such thing as enough in some aspects. Can you take a moment to tell us a little bit about those charities, the work that they do, some of the things that you are up to raise these funds that go on such important causes?
Yeah, no, listen, thanks for that, for what you've done. So, I get a lot of requests to do it. And I thought, what can I do to help me, but also to help other people? So I said, right, ask for donations. So to food banks and mental health charities. I do a lot with Liverpool Foundation now. I've been out today delivering pizza ingredients to disabled kids that have got, they can't go out, they can't leave the home because they're that vulnerable. So, a lot of people don't realise what these club foundations do. So they do some incredible work in the community. The food banks, I'm there at the food bank tomorrow delivering food to neighbours, to people that can't afford food, basically. If they didn't get this food tomorrow, they wouldn't feed. And they've got kids, so that, I get there's kids answering the doors. It's just heartbreaking when you see it firsthand. So, I've been doing a lot of that with the foundation. Obviously, it's limited. A lot of it's limited to what we can do at the minute through COVID. But, yeah, the other thing is Walking's Brilliant, which we did pre-COVID. So this was before COVID kicked in. And it was a group, basically, that struggled with mental health. So ex-footballers, start Mark Crosley, Dean Windass, Steve Harry, John Parkin. And then the more we did it, and then we started putting some videos out, people were getting in touch saying, look, I struggle, can we join in? And we were like, of course you can. And then people were coming in that had lost people to suicide for mental health. Just some awful, awful situations. So we opened it up to everyone and said, look, put your videos on, watch our videos. We're going to do walks for mental health charities. Then COVID hit. So then we said, well, we'll do it for the NHS as well to buy equipment for them. We're meant to be doing Kilimanjaro this July. That's been put back to next July. Still hoping to do coast to coast, which finishes not far from you lads up in South Shields in July. And yeah, we're just going to try and raise, there's a lot of things planned for it, but until we're out of this nightmare situation we're in. Everything's sort of on a back burner at the minute, but we've raised a lot of money already. We managed to get 2 golf days in, which raised a lot of money. There's so much more planned over the next few years, and we're just hoping it runs and runs and runs, because there's a lot of people that are involved now that suffer big time, you know, big with mental health. And I think, you know, post-COVID, I think there's going to be a lot of people suffering as well, because it's certainly tested everybody during this time.
Who's down for the coast to coast?
Who's what?
Who's down for the coast to coast? Is Big John Parkin doing it?
Parkin's doing it, yeah. The under the cost lads are doing it. Yeah, so Chris and they're all doing it. Parkey's doing it. And then there's 25 of us. We can only take 25 because we can only take 25 to Kilimanjaro. We couldn't take any more than that. So then we had the numbers for that, thinking we were going to do it. So then we just swapped it all over to. But what we're going to do is we're going to probably, if we're okay by July, which we're not sure we are going to be, we don't know yet. But if we are and everything's fine and you can meet up in larger groups, then we're going to invite people along on some of the stages where they can pay like a donation, which goes to mental health charities or the NHS. And we're going to bring like counsellors along with us. So if somebody's struggling, they can talk to counsellors. But the idea is then when we are back to some kind of normality and back to normal life, a bit of normality, we're going to do up and down the country. So we're going to do different walks up and down the country where people can come and join in. We're going to get counsellors along and go down. So there's some brilliant plans. Obviously, we've got the clothing line. Walking's brilliant at the minute. But everything it raises, everything we make, this is what the biggest, we don't get any of it. It goes all to mental health charities because we didn't do it for that. It goes to all mental health charities or to the NHS. And everything we donate will be, people will be able to see exactly where the money's gone. Because sometimes, like when you donate to the NHS, you don't actually know where it's gone to. You could give a check to the NHS and you don't know really where it's gone. It could have gone on buying a new office for one of the big wigs in the NHS. So we are actually going to buy equipment and say, look, your money has bought this operating theatre. And we're going to post it when we go into the hospitals, when we're allowed, what equipment we've bought, so people can just exactly see. Because a lot of people give money to charities and they don't really know where it's going. So we wanted to go down a slightly different route and say, look, this is what your money's bought for us and this is what it's done for people.
Incredible. And Chris, I think on record, congratulations. It's amazing what you are doing. I won't put my name down for Kilimanjaro. I will put my name down for a golf day. I play off 28. James plays off 28. If you can put us down as 36 for the day, that would be perfect, but we'll come down and support that.
Well, yeah, keep an eye out for them. You'll have to enter a team.
We will do. We will do. We'll continue to support as best we can. We've got 2 more questions. We've got 1 each, if that's okay, just as we close. Just before we go, we've had some conversations in the past about goal scoring in the Premier League, and with all the talk of Edison potentially being a penalty taker for Man City, etc. What we want to know is, if you could play up front for Man City right now, take all the penalties, all the free kicks, how many goals would you finish the season with?
Oh, do you know what? I always fancy, every goalkeeper fancies himself on the pitch. I always used to say to all my managers, I would get you 10 goals a season, definitely, if you played me up top. I never did, like, obviously, but up front for Man City at the minute, I don't know.
Could you do a better job than David James did?
The whole season, so 38 games. Was it 38 games?
38 games, all the penalties, all the free kicks. They put,
well, how many penalties have they had up to now? They've had how many penalties in there?
6 or 7, did we say the other night, Jimmy?
They've scored, though. Yes. They've missed a lot, though, haven't they?
Yeah.
I'd be disappointed if I didn't get 14 goals.
I can't believe a Premier League footballer has gone for less than me.
I was going to say 20, but I thought, no, I'll say my favourite number 14.
A Premier League footballer has gone for less than I thought I would get. That's that's no reflection on my ability. Jimmy, take our last question.
If I could just stay in the box, though, yeah. I'm not sure about all the running. If I'd just stay in the box.
You play for the
cutbacks.
Just doing
right in the box. Getting penalties, headers, yeah. Kicks.
Just a quick one to finish, Chris. Obviously, you've talked about your role at the Liverpool Foundation and what you've been doing on the streets and in the community. Have you got much ongoings with Jurgen Klopp? Can you see much of a difference going on at Liverpool under him? Or do you not really branch into that?
It's there for everybody to see. Everyone that's trying to make a huge deal about it, the two biggest facts are no fans at Anfield and the back five has just been disrupted. You know, when they won the league, the Champions League, that's the one unit in the whole team. And any team will probably say the same. You don't want that unit being dismantled. You can keep your defence solid and then playing regular, more or less every game together. you'll win things. All the teams over the past, Man U, Chelsea, Arsenal, all the teams that won championships after championship, their defence was pretty much solid. Vidic, Fernand at Man U, you know, Adams and Keown and Winterburn at Arsenal, Chelsea, Terry and, you know, Ashley Cole. So we've missed, obviously, Van Dijk. You know, I think there's been 11, 12 different partnerships in defence. Jordan's obviously dropped back in there. You lose him then, you lose what he gives you in midfield, which is a huge amount. So, yeah, they're the two biggest factors. But we've got to get on with it. You know, it's not an excuse. It's facts. And you've got to dig yourself out of it and you've got to find a way to win. And they did it the other night. And obviously, they're going to have to dig deeper again for this, for the derby this Saturday, which is obviously a huge game again. So they've just got to get through it, ride the storm. Every team goes through it. Man City went through it at the start of the season. You know, then they've turned it around and look what they've done now. So it can turn around, but you've got to stick to that. So like I said, your dressing room wins and loses your games. If you lose your dressing room, if you have fractions in your dressing room, whatever, then it's no good. You'll end up coming unstuck. So they'll get back on track, but it's going to be it's going to be a tough season, that's for sure.
Chris, thank you so much for your time, your stories, openness and honesty. We look forward to following the progress of the charity, following Liverpool's progress, seeing whether you're right about Steve Bruce coming good up north. But thank you so much once again. We look forward to catching up with you soon.
No
cheers,
worries.
Chris.
Take care, chaps. Thanks again as well. Thanks for your donation as well.
Absolute
cheers,
pleasure.
Chris. Thank you very much.
Once again, a massive thanks to Chris for his time and his conversation with us there. Insightful as ever. It's great to hear from someone who has played at the very top level, but also who is quite so open and honest about their own troubles, their own struggles, but also the work they're doing. His Walking's Brilliant charity that he mentioned, that he talks about the coast to coast with there, but also the golf days that Jimmy and I were angling in on getting involved in. They've been announced now. They are on their social media pages at Walking's Brilliant. Do support them. Do take part in them if you are available to do so. We may well try and get down there. We'll reach out to Chris once again and see if he can, he wants to put up with me and Jimmy for 4 hours once again. We might be able to win that one, Jimmy. We might not. He might be a good golfer. But why don't we have a 28 prediction? Handicap.
Well, for 28 handicap, we've got to fancy our chances.
He doesn't know what we are. He doesn't know what we are. Let's go 36. That'll be fine. why don't we close with a prediction for the week? Tinnis, you can set us up with a prediction. You take us home. What have you got for us?
Manchester United against Liverpool. Straightforward prediction. I'll give you mine. 3-1 Liverpool, big bounce back from Real Madrid, and the Geordies nearly beating us 2-1 in the last 2 minutes of the game. So yeah, 3-1 Liverpool.
Yeah, we're robbed. We're absolutely robbed. But we pick ourselves up, we move on. Big game against Arsenal the weekend, but I'm going to focus on this prediction for now. I'm going to go with a 2-1 Liverpool win, the Ox off the bench to score the winner.
Ooh. See, I'm going to go 2-1 the other way, but I think Liverpool will be 1-0 up, and then I think Man U will do their usual start playing in the second half. And to be honest, I don't really care who scores out of those two. They're Super League giants, whatever they want to call themselves. I couldn't care less.
Thanks.
Cheers.
Anything else to touch on, gentlemen?
No one listens to this bit anyway. No one makes
There's only us knows about the prediction part of the podcast.
Yeah, no one else. Jenny, no listener has got a clue that we even do this at the end of it, do they?
They just hear the interview and turn it off. It doesn't matter.
A pleasure as always, gents. I will catch Goodness you over the bank holiday weekends.
See you in a couple of
pleasure, beers. Lads. Catch you later.
See you later.
I'm the cat with the bass and drum going around like bum, bum, bum.